Hello and welcome back to another very special episode. They're all special of the Gradient Podcast. This time, episode 8. I'm Jaden. I'm the host, and I'm back and ready to go. So, Evan and Armand, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing absolutely incredible. Thank you for asking. I was just voted Gradient's favorite one-third.
Yeah, I'm doing quite well myself. I was also voted the favorite one-third of Gradient, so I am on top of the world right now.
Additionally, Jaden was also voted favorite one-third of the Gradient podcast.
Wait, you guys were also the... I thought that was just me.
Yeah, it was a three-way vote between the three of us. A very democratic process.
Wait. I voted for me. Who'd you guys vote for?
I voted for Evan.
I voted for Armand. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh my god.
Five out of ten. Didn't laugh.
Anyway. So, welcome back to episode 8. This episode, we wanted to have a little bit more of a serious discussion. Amidst the coronavirus pandemic, amidst a lot of students going back to school online, and just amidst people's daily lives. We really wanted to focus today to talk about mental health issues that face teens. And to start that off, I think we should talk about how we've been going through this pandemic, going through, you know, the circumstance that we're each in. So just kind of starting us off here, how are you guys like when it comes to this quarantine? What are we in, like month, like year 10, it feels like?
Honestly, the best thing for me is to find something you enjoy doing and continue to do it, to take up your time and give you something to look forward to. For me personally, it is this podcast. I love to put in all my effort to get putting out the best content we can. And it's something that really grounds me during this whole pandemic.
Yeah, I've been holding up pretty well during the pandemic. I would say I'm pretty used to being inside all day on the computer. but yeah, I've been holding up pretty well. I haven't really struggled too much with mental health. I mean, of course, you know, like I miss physically interacting with my friends and all. But you know, I've kept myself focused when it comes to when I'm a musician, so I play music. So I focus myself with my instruments, and so I've been doing pretty well during the quarantine.
Can you play us a beat right now with your drums?
Right now, I mean, you know, it's kind of late. I don't want to look at my parents right now. So maybe next time.
All right. Well, we'll go to Evan's next gig and we'll play you a beat.
Stay
there.
Tuned for episode 9, where Evan will be introducing the Gradient podcast with a routine of Enter Sandman.
No, but for me, kind of like you guys, quarantine hasn't been that bad. I mean, there are definitely a lot of people outside of the three of us who have it a lot worse. But I mean, I know from talking to you guys, we've definitely, you know, had our ups and downs. I mean, it's something that none of us expected. It's something we all had to kind of get accustomed to. I mean, Evan and Armand, like I have my group of close friends, and outside of that, I'm not really the most social person. But I mean, for me, yeah, it's been easy to kind of still stick with this close group of friends and not have to go outside of the house and, you know, meet other people. But I think for some people, you know, the extroverts of the world, I guess, I definitely see where people could have issues, and I do feel for them.
I consider myself more on the socially like avid side of things, where I like, obviously I'm not going to go out and party and hang out with friends all the time during the pandemic, because there's very, very blatant risk and like health factors when it comes to that. But I think the thing that sort of helps me push through this lack of like sort of social interaction was definitely social media. It's always been like something you can hold on to, something you can really, really shift the sort of interaction that usually happens virtually to happen online. But then again, there's also all these other factors when it comes to mental health attributed to spending so much time on social media.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually, and definitely something I wanted to for social media. I mean, there are definitely pros and cons to it. For me personally, I've had definitely great experiences. It's allowed me to connect with my friends, and it's allowed me just to, you know, be more social and kind of go outside of that bubble. But I definitely think, you know, when you run out of things to do in quarantine and you're on social media every single day, and then you open, you know, Instagram and then close Instagram and then you go back to open Instagram again, I mean, you definitely are, in my opinion, paying attention to what you see on social media a lot more. And I think it's really important for a lot of people to kind of like look at their situation and realize, is what I'm doing healthy? You know, should I take a break? Because for me personally, I had to do that from times. And I think Going back, it was the right decision.
Wait, Instagram?
Yes.
What is that?
Okay, so, I know you're more accustomed to, like, you know, letter on a bird, you know, throw the bird out the
MySpace.
Window. MySpace. Yes, MySpace. AOL, right?
Oh, of course, yes.
the usuals, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. It's some newfangled technology.
Last time I heard about Instagram, it was with this guy named Zuckerman. Just kidding, guys. We do, in fact, know what Instagram is, and Facebook, and Twitter, and TikTok. In fact, we are best friends with Mark Zuckerberg. He actually gave us the idea to start the podcast, and he will be on the future episodes of the Gradient Podcast. And that is an Evan last name redacted guarantee.
You know, I called up my homie, Mark Zuckerberg. He was jet skiing in the islands with all that suntan.
Have you guys heard Andy Samberg's Mark Zuckerberg impression?
Oh, of course. Classic.
It's hilarious. Impression.
Yes, classic.
But in all seriousness, I have not had, I guess you could say, the strongest relationship with social media. I have made a concerted effort to distance myself from social media use. I'm on it, you know, a couple, like, here and there, but I don't post, like, basically at all, unless it's for the Gradient Podcast, of course. You know, follow us at Gradient Podcast on Instagram. You know, Twitter on at Gradient Podcast.
Right,
you'll find
right
them
right up here.
Yeah, yeah, you'll see him
down, but, Armand, down.
Yeah, oh, somewhere down there. Over there. But yeah, like, I really haven't had a very strong relationship with social media. I have distanced myself from it, and I think, just overall, it's had a benefit on my mental health. I'm focusing less on others' perception of me and more about my own perception of me, like what I want to be rather than what I think others want me to be. I think that's really benefited just like my mindset and like where I am mentally.
I honestly love that. I love, you know, the way you put it, because I feel like it's what a lot of people are thinking, but a lot of people are, you know, kind of afraid to take that step. And I will agree with you 100%. I felt the exact same way. I did the exact same thing. You know about this. I did the exact same thing that you did. And I feel so much better. There's a lot less I need to worry about. You know, it's, I can focus on me and the things I deem important rather than, you know, what everyone else, you know. I think what you did.
Yeah, Jaden and I are both proud members of the No Snapchat Club. We have both deleted Snapchat. And while I don't want to be didactic and tell you to delete Snapchat, but I do highly suggest it. It was very good for just my mindset in general.
I'm going to be completely honest. I thought Jaden blocked me and I didn't know he deleted the app. But on another note, I feel like our society is so accustomed to using social media and receiving that feedback from others that they like to change who they are to fit some sort of stereotype and what they are like supposed to be rather than who they really are. And I feel like that's really taking away from one's like unique identity and really like taking a part of themselves out of.
I mean, yeah, 100%. I mean, kids nowadays are kids, so we can't really speak like that. But, you know,
I get my day, right?
We're going to school, you know, we have all these friends, and like a lot of times people lose themselves like trying to fit in with other people. I definitely think distancing yourself from social media, like it allows you to focus on yourself. You can show yourself before you show anyone else, you know, who you are. And I think, yeah, a lot of this plays back in going to school. You know, we have all these, you know, school friends, but now we're online and it's a little bit different, you know, the way we interact with people. So how have you guys been dealing with that?
Before we move on, I feel like we need some sort of room to clarify. When we talked about like sort of staying true to yourself, it's not like sort of a black and white sort of situation where you are yourself and you're not. It's more of a spectrum. And I feel like the more accustomed we are to being like desensitized by everyone else's opinion of us, we go farther down the spectrum. That's why we talked about earlier, it's important to hold on to those things that you really enjoy doing and those hobbies, especially during quarantine, that really make you happy. And that, again, that's why we started the podcast, and we suggest others to do similar things that really help them maintain their own identity.
Yeah, it's definitely not black and white. I guess you could just call it like a gradient, right?
A gradient.
It is a gradient, yes. Yeah.
I see I did there. Oh, I'm so funny.
10 out of 10 joke, Evan.
Oh, I'm so good at this.
So
very funny, kind of laughed.
Kind of funny, light chuckle. So,
light chuckle. I'll take a light chuckle.
Take what I can get. Okay.
All right. So, like I said before, two words for you guys. Online schooling. How have you guys been dealing with it? I worry all, you know, go to the same school. We all are kind of in the same boat here, but it's different. I mean, to say the least. Definitely something that over time we have gotten accustomed to, but, you know, right, you know, they're sending kids back. It's still a lot of, you know, adaptation and just being prepared that we have to do.
Two more words for you. Au jus. It's the sauce that they have next to your French dip, your prime rib that you dip your sandwich in. It's phenomenal. I just had it today. I want to put it out there. It's two fantastic words whenever you go to any restaurant and it's on the menu.
So going back to two relevant words to our discussion, we were talking about online school. And Evan, I really want to hear more about, you know, less of the hat act and more of, you know, your experience with online schooling.
Yeah. So we, you know, we talked about this earlier on some other episodes, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely different. You know, I really think that online school and real life school, I guess you could call it, are completely different bodies. It's like comparing apples to oranges. And so they should be treated as such. But I mean, I've been holding up pretty well. Like I said, I'm already pretty used to being inside on a computer all day. So it's not too much different from what I usually do. But yeah, I mean, online school, it's different, but I've been rolling with the punches and I've been doing pretty good myself. So I wouldn't say that I prefer it, but I'm definitely not adverse to it.
So like what I want to know kind of is the same question I'm going to ask to Armand here, but like have you seen like a noticeable effect that online schooling has had on like, you know, just your mental health as a whole or even your health in general?
Not really. I mean, maybe like my physical health a little bit. Although I'm not really sure if that was more due to virtual school or more due to just like quarantine in general. But yeah, I mean, I haven't seen or felt any like substantially significant effects personally, at least. I mean, but that's just me though.
On the other hand, again, not me personally, but I feel like for a lot of people, there's a whole new factor of stress and anxiety that comes alongside online schooling, because you have to realize there's people who are so so used to being told or like fed down their throat what the homework is, when the tests are, but now they have to do it all independently. And it's a whole new stress and like dimension and dynamic of things they have to like take heed of when they're like participating in online school. And for a lot of people, it's a lot. And we as like a society have to start getting used to more of this independent like control over what happens in our daily lives, because when we're on our own in quarantine, especially in school, it is more independent. And I feel like that goes without saying, but we really need to take hold of that and use it to our advantage instead of having it as adversity. Almost.
For me, I think the biggest issue that I've had with online schooling was kind of the transition from, you know, being in class, having a teacher teaching you like she has whatever tool she wants to use, compared to a teacher, you know, being wherever her house at school with a laptop and a camera, and you're expected to kind of garner like the same like level of education as if you were in the classroom. And I mean, like, hopefully, like a lot of other people, I was able to, you know, move past that and kind of continue where I left off with school. But it's definitely different. Like, it's a lot, like Armand said, it's a lot more independent. You have to be on top of yourself a lot more, which can get stressful. And you just have to, a lot of times you are going to have to, you know, kind of teach yourself stuff, because even though the people like to say we're always connected, we have like the internet, we have all these, you know, ways that we can stay connected with people, I feel that there is like a larger disconnect now between teachers and students than there actually ever has been.
And there's a whole nother thought I just remembered when we were talking about sort of the stress of online school. For a lot of the seniors now, they haven't taken the SAT yet, and considering online schooling, it's very difficult to, and a lot of SAT different examination days are getting canceled, and they have to rely on a lot more other things in their schooling to get into a good college or wherever they want to go. And it's putting so much more pressure on other factors when they were going to rely on their test scores. And again, more mental health pressure and stress going on them. It's a lot.
I mean, yeah, even juniors like us, you know, a lot of times people say the junior year is the most, you know, stressful year. It's the hardest year. It's, you know, kind of the year that matters most. And for us to kind of be the first class that is going to have to make this online transition in full, like, it's a lot of pressure is on our shoulders, you know, A, to keep up like the expectation that people have for us, but, you know, to also make sure that we're okay. Like, we have a lot more to deal with. And I think it's something that people need to be aware of, just so it kind of take away the stigma, so people are able to talk about things like this. Because if you know, I have you too, we are close enough to be able to talk about such things and express how we feel about school and stuff like that. And I think people definitely are going to, it'd be very helpful for people to have, you know, someone to confide to.
We encourage these kind of conversations because it really what takes away all this stress and pressure of virtual schooling and all this anxiety that's happening on your mental health. And that's why we personally are developing the Gradient Podcast book to navigate through online schooling, courtesy of Evan, last name redacted. Evan?
Yeah, not happening. But as you know, as I've said previously, talking about, you know, your mental health is a very important and useful way as well of dealing with it. And of course, there are plenty of licensed professionals who are trained and are experts in, you know, talking you through the struggles you are having with your mental health and ways that you could improve your mental health. And so today for episode 8, the Gradient Podcast, we have a very, very special guest. So, Armand, you want to go ahead and introduce our guest?
Yes. Next up, we have psychologist and director of Alvord Baker and Associates with more than 35 years of clinical experience and the best dancing psychologist, Dr. Mary Alvord. Thank you so much for coming on the Gradient Podcast.
My pleasure.
Hey, it's a great to have you. So we can go ahead and start with our first question. So we wanted to ask, you know, as teenagers who, you know, have maybe friends who struggle with mental health, what is the best way that I can support my friend who is struggling with mental health, unfortunately?
Yeah, the best way is to be a good listener and validate how they feel. There's still stigma about mental health, and that's why I really try to promote mental wellness and discussions about it, because being a good friend means you listen to somebody, you know, you hear them, and then if needed, you also will point them to resources, but openness is the key.
I want to add on to what you say real quick. When you talk about sort of openness and conversation, I feel like that goes alongside with normalizing therapy on a professional level as well.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. I think that we've come a long way since I first became a psychologist in terms of normalizing feelings, and especially now, there's just so many feelings and so much discord and difficulties. And so therapy, there's a book that came out a long time ago, and in the first chapter, it was written by a psychiatrist, actually, who said the healthiest people are the people who seek therapy. Why? Because they're aware that they may have some vulnerabilities or they may have some difficult patches in their life, and they're open to it, and you know, they seek help. So that's actually the healthiest people, who are open to whatever, to feedback and to acknowledging what it is that might be bothering you or weaknesses that you have. Good. Thanks for bringing that up.
So what effect have you noticed on teens' mental health from the coronavirus pandemic?
Oh, so many. I think in the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of concern by teens for their grandparents. You know, there was this worry. The message was older people get it and we have to protect our grandparents and we're shutting the schools down to protect everybody. And then it became, and I think where you are, the schools didn't close right away or now they're open, but every part of the country dealt with a little differently, but I'll try to generalize. But, you know, that was the message, that it was older people. And then it became known that, well, it's younger and younger. And there are a lot of teens with comorbidities. You know, there are many teens who have diabetes, which is a risk factor. So the anxiety went up. And then I think a lot of sadness set in because of the isolation, because, you know, we talk about social distancing. I actually call it physical distancing, because that's what we're trying to do, is physical distancing and yet stay socially connected. So it's that social connection that was really hard for teens, because for teenage, you know, your peer group and your getting together and talking in person is really important. It's not quite the same. It's great that we have this virtual, we have texting, but it's not the same as in person. You know, and I think there's just a lot of fallouts from the pandemic, but those are the two that were really fast and furious. And then the anxieties set in of what's going to happen, you know, for juniors, am I going to be able to take the SAT? What do I do for college? What about sports? A lot of what, because there just weren't clear answers in the beginning, particularly. And then the disconnect from friends has been really hard. And then for many families, there have been economic consequences and instability and worries. Even people at the higher end of the economic range, perhaps, you know, somebody was a restaurant owner. Well, you know, they may have been in the higher range, but now suddenly they are feeling the pinch of having to close down. And I think also just the racial tensions in the country and the political divisiveness, the mixed messages all along. Teens are really smart and very aware and listen to all this. It's just, it's hard. So we've seen increases in anxiety. I saw a research, a survey come out of Cornell the other day that teens have tripled the depression rate. So that's alarming. Tripled? And all the implicate tripled, yes.
Wow.
Right, so that's just alarming. And then with that, we wanna make sure that we do a good job with suicide prevention. And then we just talk about all this, you know? It's real. I mean, feelings and thoughts are real to the person having them. And we need to have avenues for people to just bounce off of friends and then also seek help. And there's different levels of help too.
So to go back to what you were saying just now, when it comes to mental health for teens, what are some of the major examples of stress that put pressure on teens in their daily lives?
Well, I think I mentioned some. I think there's, you know, the difficulty of the shutdown and virtual school and what that means. You know, if you were involved in the school theater, what does that mean? What does it mean for all the rites of passage, you know, homecoming and applying to college? There are just so many implications. And I hear teens really worrying about that, you know, and how are we going to take the SATs and how are colleges going to count things? And then feeling more isolated, which is really problematic. So we need to do our part to make sure people aren't as isolated. And then I think it depends on your individual family situation. You know, how stable is the family? You know, are there a lot of arguments in the family? Is there acceptance of the teen for the identity that they choose? So so many different, you know, there's like the levels, the layers of the onion that you can peel. I think those are just, those are some of the most common that I hear. And just the fear, you know, the truth is that many people know someone or have lost a loved one to COVID. And it may not be in your inner circle, but there's a lot of loss and grief going on. And now we're at over 200,000 people have died. And I think, I don't know how many millions have actually contracted COVID. So it's sort of weighing, I think, on everyone.
So when it comes to some of the causes of mental health issues, I think it's also very important to talk about the symptoms of these issues. So what symptoms should teens be looking out for when regarding their mental health?
Yeah, you know, I think if they're worried a lot and they're having trouble sleeping and their thoughts get stuck, we call them kind of the anxious stuck thoughts. They keep thinking about things a lot and they're asking people for reassurance. That is a sign of sort of the anxiety and maybe even panicky. You don't have to have a full-blown panic attack, but feeling that panic with your, you know, your heart racing and sweating and, you know, just accelerated speech and just feeling really kind of wrung and just a lot of worries. And then there's also the sad side. I think if you feel like you don't want to be with your friends or you don't want to connect with anybody and you find yourself isolating more, maybe oversleeping, like when you're not supposed to, and avoiding situations or people or contact or work. So avoidance is a big part of that. You know, and so we need to lean into each other instead of pull away from each other. But that's a sign. The other thing is if you're having thoughts about hurting yourself or, you know, and it could be self-harm. It doesn't necessarily mean thoughts of suicide. But, you know, if you're having any dark thoughts and just feel like you want to pull away, I think all of those are good indications. And there's a lot of help everywhere.
Before we go on to the next question, I have a quick follow-up. You spoke about how thoughts of anxiety is a sort of like a tell of mental illness or like in need of mental help. But I feel like there's some sort of line between constant anxiety and anxiety in terms of when it's like reasonable. Like for instance, if I'm taking a test and I have a borderline grade, how is there like a differential between?
There is. I think it's how does it affect your functioning? So a little bit of anxiety actually is a positive. It makes us not jump off of a cliff. You know, it's a warning sign that we have to not do something really risky. It also motivates us, like you said, like if you've got a test coming up, a little bit of anxiety goes a long way in terms of motivating us, because if we didn't have any worries about it, then we probably wouldn't do much. So it's a motivator. The line is when you can't do what you need to do, when it starts getting in the way of feeling good about, you know, all the interactions that you have, if it's getting in the way of you doing your schoolwork, if it's getting in the way of interacting with people outside of school, even if it's not in person. So for me, that's the line. How much does it interfere with your life?
I'll give an example myself. Just this morning, I was competing this past weekend at the Yale Speech and Debate Tournament. It was virtual, of course. I didn't travel anywhere. And I made it to an elimination round, which is top 24. And right before my round, which was the first round of the day today, I had a little bit of anxiety. Of course, it was one of the biggest rounds of speech and debate I've ever had. And I feel like it motivated me almost to perform the best I did the entire tournament. Granted, I didn't make it farther, but I felt very, very, very satisfied with how I competed.
Yeah, and that's the part of anxiety that can help motivate it. You know, your adrenaline gets pumped in. And for some people, that helps with clarity of mind too. So that's the good part. But then if you start sort of dwelling and getting stuck on all the problems, or if you then started thinking all this, what we call negative self-talk about the debate, you didn't sound like you're doing really well with it and you're pleased with how far you got. But let's say you were somebody who was a perfectionistic, or you just tended to get down on yourself and was like, oh, that was the stupidest thing I said. Why did I say that? You know, oh, they were bored. Oh, that person was looking at me. You know, even virtually, people see other people in the screen and they can get into a lot of sort of the being down about themselves and those negative self-talk, as well as some social anxiety of worrying about all the judgment. Usually you're thinking it's negative. No, not like, oh, they all think I'm great, but it's... they're not thinking I'm so great.
So in your book, Conquer Negative Thinking, for really stress the importance for teens, you know, self-motivators and them to be proactive. And you kind of advise them to be more cognizant of their own actions, you know, their own choices. So beyond teenagers, what can adults do to support teens being more proactive? And so what can they do to kind of push teens to stop saying that they can't do something?
Well, I think, you know, it's parents serve as role models and cheerleaders. And I just want to say there's also the line between parents taking over and doing things for teens and versus encouraging them to be more, as you said, you know, more proactive and taking more initiative. And we really want parents to do that encouragement. So when a teen says, I can't, it's like, you know, you get to some challenge questions as a parent. You say, well, did you do anything like this in the past? You know, well, probably. Okay, so how did it work out then? You know, what's a plan? What could you do to make this better? How could you try to make it better? And I always say, what would you tell your friend? If you your friend was saying they can't do this and they can't do that, would you say, oh yeah, right, you can't do it, you're a failure? No, you would probably encourage them and say, look, you've done it before, you can just try, or maybe we can come up with some ideas of how you can try to do it a little bit differently if it wasn't working the way you were doing it.
So we talked about some of the symptoms that someone might see if they're struggling with their mental health. And we talked about, you know, like talking to a friend about, you know, like what you should do. So, you know, if I'm a teen and I see my friend struggling with mental health, how can I bring up the conversation of, you know, them possibly seeking help or like anything like similar along those lines?
Well, I think the first thing as a friend is you just say, look, I've noticed you are pulling away. You know, I've noticed that, you know, you're sounding sad when you talk about certain things. I notice you're not calling me back and I know we're good friends. You know, I'm wondering how I can help, but also who else is in your support system? So I wouldn't necessarily go to like, you need professional help, but who else is in the support system? And is that really enough? Or, you know, then you can suggest maybe talking to somebody who will keep what you say confidential and is not, you know, a parent. Parents are good to talk to too, but at a professional level, you know, you can say whatever you think and no one is going to judge you. So, you know, the key is to sort of gently say, look, there's some advantages to talking to a professional. And, you know, how can we, maybe we start with saying, have you talked to your pediatrician about it? Or have you talked to your internal medicine doctor about it? As a way, and then, you know it's helped so-and-so, so maybe this would be a good thing. The key is really clear, honest communication, not beating around the bush, just being direct, but gentle direct. You know, I care about you, so I'm saying this because I care so much about you. And that visibility to the other person means a lot.
So, what advice would you give to teens who are afraid to ask for help?
I would say they could start with an anonymous hotline. And maybe even if they're sharing with you, but they don't really want to share with someone else, maybe you could call that hotline with them. Now, so there's great, like SAMHSA has a 24/7 hotline. They've got two different kinds. And those are wonderful because that can sort of, I think, you know, we had talked about stigma, reduce the stigma, but I think also reduce that fear of what might happen. And so that's what I say to teens sometimes is, what's the worst case scenario that you're afraid of if you talk to somebody? What do you think might happen? And sometimes it's they're scared of even sort of saying it out loud, or maybe they feel shame or guilt or, you know, the stigma, somebody's going to think something negatively. Hopefully, in this day and age, we really have come much closer to normalizing, as we said in the beginning, normalizing mental health. I mean, we all experience the whole range of feelings. Everybody does. The key is when it starts interfering with your life, when it gets in the way. And that's when, you know, we need help. I mean, if you have a toothache, you're not going to think, okay, I'm just going to live with this, you know, it'll get better. You're going to go to a dentist and figure out what's going on. You know, if you cannot solve that, you know, algebra two problem, you're going to get online, you're going to look at resources. And it's the same that has to happen with mental health. Mental health is as important as physical health. The mind and the body are completely connected. When we're stressed out, our body reacts to that. And our muscles tense, we can't think as clearly, you know, we start sweating, and we don't do as well. So we really want to take care of our bodies as well as our mind.
I feel like coexisting with that, you developed a resilience builder program for children and adolescents. Would you like to speak upon that?
Sure, it's mostly a group therapy program. And the beauty of group work is that people know they're not alone. So, for example, with the teen groups, you know, they meet with other teens and we learn skills like about being proactive, which means pro and active, taking good action as opposed to being reactive. So many of us react without thinking through. So we need to take that pause. We also don't want to be passive. So this is a big part of the programs. We don't want to feel like we're victims. You know, bad things happen, good things happen, life happens. We want to do what we can. We want to focus on what we can control. So the program really helps you focus on what are the things that you can control. Even during COVID, people can control what they do and the choices that they make. And then, you know, we talk about, well, the things you can't control, you need to accept. But you don't need to accept things that are not going well that you can do something about. And that's when we really focus on what action can you take. Just think about when you have a plan of action, even if you don't do it right away, immediately it just relieves a lot of tension. You know, it just takes a load off of you. But if you're always feeling like, you know, you're blaming other people for what's going wrong and what's happening to you, I mean, that just feels bad. So we really want to have you take responsibility. And we do a lot on stress management. And really develop coping strategies for all. So it's a very practical program. And you know, the Conquer Negative Thinking is a book, it's a workbook. So what's nice about it and why I developed it was after many years, I couldn't really find something that had a lot of the thinking errors all sort of in one book and aimed at teens. And since I love working with teens, I thought, well, okay, let's put something together so that if you don't seek professional help, you can look at a workbook and at least get started on some of this, or use it to supplement. So I do a lot of things. I've, you know, been practicing for a long time, and I love the field, and I love the fact that we can make positive impact on everyone's lives.
So is the program online or is it an in-person thing?
Yeah, well, right now it's all virtual. So I do mine from here. And so we have not been, so normally pre-mid-March, we were in person. And some people could join virtually even back then. Now we're completely closed in terms of any in-person visits. Everything is virtual. And, you know, it works out really well. Everybody can be in the comfort of their own home, and yet we're very much connected. But the program is not, it's not like a web-based, you know, it's led by a psychologist or a clinical social worker. But
So not to give too much away, but we come from a high school that is lucky enough to have a variety of mental health services available for students on mm-hmm. campus. But unfortunately, most students do not have these kinds of resources in their own high schools. So what can schools do to support their students' mental health?
You know, I actually started a nonprofit a couple of years ago, and we go into high poverty community schools to try and bring the Resilience Builder program. But our next phase is to really train teachers to do some of these resilience building skills, because I think we need to scale it up. Unfortunately, most schools, whether they be private or public, have only one counselor available, maybe two. Maybe a huge high school may have three, but a lot of them are doing plans and schedules. Their time isn't really for counseling. And so they're stretched thin. So my feeling is we need to do larger scale training of everyone, and mental health should be integrated into the curriculum. I mean, it's as important as, you know, world history. You know, it affects our lives daily. So I'm hoping to scale up this, the nonprofit as it scales up so that we can do more impact on a larger, more of a what we would call a universal intervention as opposed to a targeted intervention, because targeted interventions are just for select students or for, you know, but how many students can you see? Can a few counselors see? The school psychologists, you know, there are not that many of them either. So we need to think about an educational system that starts valuing mental health, I think, more than it does. You know, you take health class as probably a sophomore, you get one part of that is mental health, and that's usually it. So that's my hope.
So I just want to end by saying thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Alvord. Us three here have learned a lot from this, and I think definitely something that we're going to use guide and what we do in the future. I hope that people who are watching this as well can take away. And if they are feeling any thoughts or anything that is harming them, that they just learn from this, see guidance. So again, thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome. I think
before we exit super quickly, would you like to say a couple of resources you know of directly that people, our viewers, if they need to, can contact anonymously?
Yes. I think that, you know, look at it's SAMHSA, SAMHSA.gov, and they have different, I don't have the numbers on me, but there are people there. These crisis hotlines are terrific resources. I guess the main point that I would like to make with this is you're not alone. Like, we're all in this together now in this pandemic. But in general, no one is alone, even though we can feel around, right? We can be in a group of people and we can still feel alone. But but just know that there's always somebody there to that you can reach out to. So the hotlines, I'd say there's a lot of these workbooks that are very helpful. Just Google everything, right? Go to your favorite bookstore or Amazon and Google keywords that are meaningful to you and find the resources. And SAMHSA.gov actually has a lot of tip sheets. The American Psychological Association has a help center, and there are resources there for adults, but also for teens. And that is www.apa.org. And then across the banner is the Psychology Help Center. And then you can do put in keywords, but there is something called Teens Got Bounce, and it's about being resilient, which is so important now because we have just so much going on in our country, in the world, that's stressful. And it's uncertainty on a daily basis. There's uncertainty. Every day we wake up and we don't know what's happening in the world, but we also don't know what's happening in our world. And for some of you who've gone back to school in person, that can change in a couple of days. Suddenly it's like, whoops, just kidding, we're back to virtual, or, well, we're gonna move forward, but we don't know when. So just a lot of uncertainty.
Again, thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome, it was a pleasure.
So just as Dr. Alvord said, if you or anyone you know is having signs of issues with their mental health, please just don't be afraid to confide in someone. Look for your friends to help you. You can look for even a professional to help you. But know that someone is there when you need them most. And I think this brings us perfectly in our greeting Q&A segment. We wanted to do this one at the end because we thought it was a really good question and it fit perfectly with our discussion today. So this question comes from Tyler Cool Awesome on Instagram, who says, outside of the podcast, how close are the three of you? And then you guys want to start with that one?
We are three peas in a pod, inseparable from our class schedules, which are completely identical, to our appearances, which are also identical.
Yeah, we all look the exact same, which is kind of weird for people who are not related at all, but we all look the exact same.
I don't know how you guys can tell us apart.
Like, I actually can't. I only see the name tags next to the your little window.
Yeah, I just guess half the time.
Yeah. but in all seriousness, we are three very good friends, two of which decided to start a podcast together, and the third one which decided to maneuver his way into it. But we're beyond thankful to have him, because honestly, us three make the best team. And honestly, this podcast brought us a lot closer as friends. We were very close before, but we're even closer now.
I mean, we were pretty close. I mean, I've known Armand since middle school, and Jade and I became quick friends once we met in high school. And you know, like, we had classes together, you know, like the three of us. And so, and you know, we were friends. You know, we definitely enjoyed each other's company. Yeah. but yeah, like, you know, making this podcast, you know, working together on a very important project to us really has, like, fostered a really healthy growth of a great relationship, both, you know, as working partners, you know, on the podcast, as well as just like friends. And so, like, I really enjoy spending my time with you guys. Like, in all seriousness, though, I really am appreciative of you guys being close friends. And so, yeah, I think we work as a team, and I'm glad to have you guys as good friends.
I mean, you both said exactly what I had to say. But, I mean, I'm, like both of you guys said, I've known Armand since sixth grade, and I met Evan 2 years ago. I don't even remember how long it's been.
Yeah, like freshman year. Yeah,
yeah,
I was the mutual friend.
I met Evan freshman year, and I mean, we just grew close since then, and I'm just very glad to have, you know, you two and be able to call you guys friends. And I 100% I do think this podcast has brought us a lot closer together. And I mean, yeah, outside of the podcast, we're close friends. This podcast has brought closest together, and I'm just kind of excited to see, you know, where we go in the future. Just, we're gonna stay close. I mean, yeah, with all that being said, that's all that we have for you guys today. You know, forgive us for the, I don't remember how long it's been, but we've had a little bit of a hiatus from our last episode, but we're not going anywhere. We have a bunch of great ideas that we just have to, you know, put into action, I guess. So anything you guys would like to say?
Hey, Gradient viewers, staring contest. You got me.
I'm still going. Couldn't last that long.
I mean, yeah. I mean, thank you guys so much for watching, you know, our socials. We always say this every time. You'd love to follow us. We really do appreciate it. It shows, you know, how much, you know, like our content and how, you know, it really motivates us for the future, you know. I mean, Armand already calls you guys the Grady Bunch, so, you know.
Definitely... Grady Bunch, I thought you turned it down.
name's still pending.
Name's still pending. Drop your suggestions of our fan base name in the comments.
Yeah.
Winner. If you really want us to be called the Grady Bunch, don't. But, I mean, is that really what you want us to be called?
I mean.
No, that's what we call them.
They're right. My mistake.
Silly Evan. Last time redacted.
I mean, thank you so much
for watching. Oh, Armand. Last name redacted.